Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where we talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I am welcoming back a good friend of mine, Jeff C., to talk about an experience and a book that he and I both had and read recently by Gay Hendricks. The book is called The Big Leap. We're going to go through our experience of reading that book, give a bit of a summary of what the book's about and some lessons you can take away from it. But then we're really going to hone in on the concept of time, specifically the concept of Einstein time, as Gay Hendricks, the author of the book, talks about, and what that means to us. And we're going to pull out some practical steps that he and I have walked away with from that concept. So not to just have a philosophical conversation, but to have some practical steps that you can take and walk away from and use as well. Before we get into that, I want to say thank you to Formstack for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Formstack's one of those awesome tools that does one thing, but does it amazingly well. And that one thing is easily create beautiful branded forms in minutes to collect data in any department inside or outside of your business. What this means is that you will get rid of the headache that is data collection, whether that's creating the form up front, working with a development team to make sure that happens, or if you need to make changes, as well as deploying it and monitoring and tweaking it for your employees or for lead generation, customer feedback, plain old surveys for that matter, even collecting payments or donations. And your data is completely secure because Formstack is 100% HIPAA compliant. And Formstack connects with over 40 apps like PayPal, Salesforce, MailChimp, and more. So if you're looking for an easy to build lead generation form for your website, or just a quick way to do an awesome, beautiful, easy to implement survey tool, Formstack is it. Go to formstack.com/beyond for a free trial and to receive a promo code for 25% off your first 3 months. Again, that's formstack.com/beyond for a free trial and get a 25% off promo code for your first 3 months. Thanks again, Formstack, for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Now enjoy this conversation with Jeff C. This week, it is my privilege to welcome back to the show, Jeff C. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you and I experienced something together about a month ago, a little over a month ago. We went down to Jeff Goins Tribe Conference, which was fun. And I think we should talk a little bit about our experience there because we both were blown away by how well it was done and how good an event it was. But then we'll get into a book that an audio book, I guess, that we both listened to on the way there and then start to unpack that. So
yeah, this will be fun.
It'll be fun. So Tribe Conference. So for me, it was about more like a 6 hour drive. For you, I think it was a little longer, right? Like 8 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did it in 2 days. So it was a fun, I always like road trips because it gives me a chance to listen to podcasts and like this book we're going to talk about. So yeah, I enjoyed it. And it's a pretty drive from where I'm at in Texas.
Yeah. It was good for me too. I just go straight south from Indiana down to through Kentucky and through into Tennessee and then into Nashville. And it's honestly, this was the first time I'd been there in about 2 years, which was long overdue. Got way too many friends down there that I don't see often enough. And Jeff Goins has been on the show recently twice. And I had just been meaning to go to his event for, I don't know, years now. This, I think, was the third one, if I'm not mistaken. And the previous 2 years, I was just like, man, I want to go down. It's just a quick drive. And this time, I don't know what it was. What I just said earlier in the summer, okay, I'm going. And so we locked it in and decided to go.
Right. And we talked about it, and Eric and I are in a mastermind together. And so we actually talked about a mastermind, and it was fun to meet up with the other member of our mastermind down there. And yeah, it was a great conference. I mean, it was a decent sized conference, but it felt really small. And Jeff did such a good job. It felt really intimate, but it was very, it was just really well done.
Yeah, I think it was the best small conference, other than, say, maybe the exception of another one in Nashville. Craft Content that I typically go to, that, you know, Jeff, which is where I first met Jeff anyway, used to be called Podcast Nashville. It was a PodCamp Nashville, actually, I think.
Cool.
So what did we, I mean, the conference was pretty cool. Like, it in and of itself was that really, like you said, it was really well done. It was small. It was intimate. It had a rotating speaker lineup that would come up and do, you know, about a half hour. We were lucky enough to hang out with Dan Miller and a few other people, Aaron Walker or Aaron, however you want to pronounce it. there's a debate.
And, Big A.
We, and so that was fun. And yet the conversation kept coming back to between you and myself and even Cliff Ravenscraft, who was there, about this book he'd been evangelizing everybody about called The Big Leap, written by Gay Hendrix. And so unbeknownst to me, you had said, and I had already decided I was going to read it at some point or listen, try and find and listen to it. You said, hey, I've got this loaded up for my trip down. So I was like, oh, so I opened up an app that I don't know a lot of people know about. It's called Hoopla, H-O-O-P-L-A. And it's a digital app on my phone. And I forget what else. I think it's cross-platform. Anyway, if you have a local library connection, a lot of libraries, I think, have connections to this app to where you can just literally download for a window of time, ironically, the audiobooks or comics or movies or music albums. So I downloaded the book for free and listened to it on my way down.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I didn't know about that until after I had already purchased the book. So I bought the book, but I did that from Amazon, and I'm a big Kindle guy. And so I think for a couple extra bucks, you're able to get the Audible edition. So I got the Audible edition and listened to it down there. I didn't get all the way finished with it. I actually got to the section that we're going to talk about today, and I had to finish it on my Kindle reading it. But it was a very interesting book on the way to listen to on the way down there, and it was good that we got there and we had some discussion about it. And even the conference, it's all about creativity, and there's a lot of writers there and bloggers and stuff, and so it kind of fit into the whole creative thing that you and I talk about quite a bit. I'm excited to dive deep into this with you today.
I just realized that, ironically, also listening to this audiobook the whole way down there made that 5 to 6 hour trip feel like it did not take 5 or 6 hours.
That's right.
So let's get into this book, though. So one of the reasons that Cliff is evangelizing everybody about this book is this thing called the Zone of Genius. But before we get to that zone, I want to talk about some of the zones below it, and then also some of the barriers that we self-sabotage or have limiting beliefs about ourselves that keep us from getting up into those upper limits. So the base level, I think there's probably even a zone of incompetence where people, so let's name them off real quick. So there's the zone of competence, there's the zone of excellence, and there's the zone of genius. And I guess I just made up the zone of incompetence, where you're just in the zone of getting nothing done of worth at all. Zone of competence for me, again, these are going to vary between people and probably even between us, but I think the zone of competence is where we're just like, okay, the bills are paid. And that's good. Like that's about it. Like the dishes are washed, and or maybe not. Maybe, but anyway, I ate dinner. The bills are paid. The kids are in bed. That's the zone of competence for me, I guess. Zone of excellence is where things are good. Like if people ask you, how we always say, people are like, hey, how are you doing? And you're like, good.
Good. Yeah.
This is where you truthfully mean that. You're like, I am getting everything. I'm getting everything, not just everything done that I need to do, but you're getting some of the stuff done that you want to do, that you feel called to do, that you're created to do, made to do, however you want to put this. You're getting things done, and you're getting more than just the things done that have to be done. You're getting the things done that you want to do, that fulfill you. So that makes sense. So then how would you describe the zone of genius?
Well, the interesting thing, that's something that, and I talked to Cliff a little bit about this at the Tribes Conference, but it's what you can do really better than anybody else, like in your circle. I mean, I think it's a little far to say you're the best than anybody else in the world, because there's always, I think, some people who can do things like you. But I mean, like in your circle, I mean, the things that you can pull together that you're good at that you couldn't, and I think somebody said something about like, you couldn't hire a first year college student to do for you. It's something that you do really, really well, and you excel at it, and it kind of completes you in what you, who you think you are. I mean, there's so many aspects of this. Now, the cool thing is, you know, I talked to Cliff about this because I wanted to know, you know, are you born with your zone of genius or what happens there? And we talked about it, and your zone of genius, and I would assume all the other zones as well, can change over time. Like your zone of genius may be different today than it was like 3 years ago. And I can really see that. So on this section of the book, it helped me kind of drill down into myself and really think about, okay, what am I good at? What am I excellent at? What am I just, you know, like you said, paying the bills with the zone of confidence. So I really liked that section of the book and it makes sense to me. So I liked, and even the stuff the stuff that we self-sabotage and seeing how that can affect the different zones. I thought that was a really insightful part of the book as well.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, I go back to a lot of the time a quote by Jay Baer, which I don't fully have, you know, top of mind or in front of me, but he says something along the lines of, you know, delegating or only delegating to others the things that you shouldn't be doing because only you in your business. In fact, I know he said it on this show way back in the first like few episodes of this podcast itself, that you should only be doing the things that you are uniquely qualified to do. It has to do with right. delegation and all of that. And the thing is that, you know, when it comes to zone of genius, yeah, I think that much like our interests or our passions or even our talents, we may have innate or natural talents that we were born with. Others, you know, skills we grow and learn. You know, I didn't know that I liked podcasting when right. I was born. Right. But it does make sense that I was interested in it because I was always walking around with this white radio and a cassette tape and recording things and myself and my friends and family right. and whatever. So, but I think that can change over time. Like, I don't know none of us knows, for example, I mean, keeping with the thread of podcasting, none of us know the shape or form or thread that podcasting will take as it moves forward for the next, you know, 40, 50 years or more while we're alive. So right. to say, I'm in my zone of genius doing podcasting for the rest of my life. Like, it's not that rigid, but it's similar. And then ultimately, Gay talks a lot in the book about how we self-sabotage ourselves from moving from the lower levels into the upper levels and ultimately into the zone of genius with limiting beliefs and feeling like, you know, when we feel like we can't do something, we have to check ourselves and feel like, you know, hey, why am I holding myself back? And there's a lot of, as I was listening to him read the book, I'm like, okay, this does make sense. There's a lot here. And I don't want to talk negatively about the book that much. But I think right. there's some real easy to gloss over kind of frou-frou, touchy-feely stuff mm-hmm. in it.
right.
But I think there's some concrete stuff too.
Yeah. And here's something, and you and I have discussed this too. And, you know, we talk a lot about seasons of life where we're at. And, you know, when you're starting something, you know, and you're having to do stuff that's you're in the zone of competence, you might not being able to have time. Like you talked about delegating. Well, you know, it's great to say that, like, hey, just hire a VA or, right. you know, pass off the stuff that you're not good at. When you're first starting and you're like a solopreneur, you know, that financially sometimes just can't happen. And, you know, we hear a lot of these gurus and things like this, you know, be in your zone of genius. You need to do this, this, and this. Well, sometimes you just can't and you have to work in the zone of competence and move up to the zone of excellence and then get in your zone of genius. It's a process. I mean, you may be super good at something right now that's in your zone of genius, but the facts of life are you can't pass off the stuff that you're having to do in your zone of competence just because of where you're at. And so I think that's important for your listeners to understand too, that, you know, you got to take some of this with, you know, real life too, I guess.
Yeah. There's a pacing to this. I think there's not, I mean, ironically again, and I'm using that word a lot because it fits, it makes sense. Right. Ironically, the book is called The Big Leap. But I don't know how much of a big leap it is. I think it's now that said, I think there's probably a couple of times where it's, you know, motivational. No, you've got to thrust right. yourself forward right. and move from out of old ways of doing things into the new way and the new way of being and all that. And I can get behind that to a certain extent, but there's also this realistic realm of you have to build up slowly but surely. if I were to say to somebody, like to go all Dave Ramsey on somebody, for example, if you've got a mountain of debt, you're not going to suddenly be debt-free the next day because you decide you are.
Right.
That's just not the realistic reality of life. But that's not to say you couldn't have a sudden shift in your perspective or your perception of that debt and the ability to start hacking away at it.
Right. And I go back to, I point back to Jeff Goins and his book, the, his just recent one, the Real Artists Don't Starve, and how he talks about, you know, everybody says leap and the net will appear and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I really like his philosophy of like, that may not be smart. You've got a family. And so that's the kind of the thing I go back to too. It's like, you know, all these, the books and the self-help gurus and, you know, you've got to apply it to your life. I mean, it's not one size fits all the time. And I like this book because it did make me come and reevaluate, like I said, what zone I'm in and what can I think about passing off and what can I work towards. But yeah, it's, I think that taking it and applying, just like you mentioned with Dave Ramsey, there's some practical applications you have to think of.
For sure. Before we get into talking about Einstein time, I want to say thank you to a few sponsors for this episode. And if you know anything about FreshBooks, then you know that's all about time as well. FreshBooks is an amazing online accounting software that's completely transforming how freelancers and small business owners deal with their day-to-day paperwork. Recently, they redesigned the entire app from the ground up and custom built it for the way that people were actually using it. And the way that they're using it is they are using it to be more productive and organized and get paid more quickly by tracking the time that they're taking on their projects, having it logged in FreshBooks automatically, creating quick and simple, easy branded invoices to send off and get paid, and then even track to see when the people have seen those invoices so that they can keep track of them easier and have the turnaround on them be much faster. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to listeners of Beyond the To-Do List. And to claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/to-do and enter Beyond the To-Do List in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Test it for yourself. Go to freshbooks.com/TODO and enter Beyond the To-Do List in the How Did You Hear About Us section. When I think of time, I often think of my favorite time travel trilogy, Back to the Future. Quick question. What is Doc Brown's dog's name? If you said Einstein, you guessed right. And in a minute, we're going to talk about Einstein time. But before we get into that, I want to say thank you to BarkBox. BarkBox is a delivery of 4 to 6 natural treats or super fun toys curated around a surprise for your dog or the dog in the life of someone that you know. Every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and toys that match your dog's unique needs, including allergies or chewing preferences. BarkBox is a great way to get a variety of treats or toys that you honestly sometimes may not have time to go shop for or find. And BarkBox has a guarantee that if your dog does not like something in the box, they will send you something they will love for free. When I got my BarkBox, or should I say my dog's BarkBox, we opened it up and inside was a bunch of different treats that we tried, as well as his favorite thing, which was a Chinese takeout container that then you opened up and had these squeaky toy dumplings. And my dog's an older dog. He is very much a cat and sleeps on the couch, the top couch cushions all the time, looking out the window. But when he heard the squeaks, he got up and he would not stop playing with these. I was amazed. So right now, BarkBox is offering a free extra month of BarkBox when you visit BarkBox.com/beyond when you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan. So if you want to treat your dog well, because let's face it, if you're like me and you work from home, he's your coworker or a member of the family for that matter. You can get a free extra month of BarkBox by going to BarkBox.com/beyond. So here's the part of the show where we get all sci-fi and scientific or theoretical, but I want us to come out the other end with practical application, because I'm just going to say this up front. As I was listening to the book and driving, he starts talking about Einstein time and talking about this concept of time. And I'm thinking, oh, this is like this is productivity realm.
Right.
Cool. What's he going to say? And he gets fully done with the Einstein time segment. And when he was finished, I said, wait, did I miss something? I don't understand. Right. And it's not that I didn't understand what he was saying. It's that I just fully feel like he does not fully elaborate, or like he left out like half a chapter by accident. Right. Because
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember we went to the we met at the conference, and we both had read, we listened to this, and we both went, did you get, what was that at the end? What happened? Did we skip a chapter? Yeah. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, because he says in this thing, I've discovered this secret, and it's how I get twice as much done in half the time. And I'm like, ooh, tell me, what's the secret?
Right.
And he says, it's Einstein time. And then I'm like, okay, but how are you applying the I mean, and then he goes on to explain, and we will in a minute. He explains what Einstein time is. But then once he's done explaining it, he then says, now because of this, I get twice as much done in half the time. But what the connecting piece was missing between, okay, how are you applying this theory to your life that you are then getting twice as much done in half the time? And I'm starting to see it now, but only by my own digging and thought process outside of the book. It is honestly a weakness of the book, and I'm just going to be honest and upfront about that. But I still feel like pondering Einstein time as opposed to Newtonian time, as he puts it, is worth going through. So, I think you landed in the same place as I did.
Right. Yeah. And let's call it Einsteinian time because it sounds more Star Trek-y.
Right. I'm going to read through a couple of things he says straight out of the book here. So he says, specifically, I discovered I had time all wrong. There was never enough of it and I was rushed, or there was way too much and I was bored. I never got all the things done that I needed to, even though I felt like I was working overtime. Then one magical day, I had a big realization. My understanding of time was based on an outmoded Newtonian paradigm. In a flash of insight, I saw that Einstein's paradigm was the way time actually worked. He then goes on to say, at the heart of Newtonian time, the time crunch is a dualistic split. We are deluded into thinking that time is out there, an actual physical entity that can put pressure on us in here. When we switch to Einstein time, we take charge of that amount of time we have. We realize that we're where time comes from. We embrace this liberating insight. Since I'm the producer of time, I can make as much of it as I need. Now, we should probably say what Newtonian time is, and then probably round out with a little bit of what Einstein did actually say about time before we move on to comments and interpretations. So, Newtonian time is essentially the 24-hour day. 60 minutes to an hour, 24 hours to a day, 7 days a week. What we are used to and has been proven to be actually the structure that time moves on. He's saying, without saying it, he's saying, and again, this is one of those things where it's like, wait, so you're saying that's not true at all? Like, there's no there's no day or night. Up is down, left is right. Like,
dogs and cats living together.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know that he's saying that, but what he doesn't specifically say is, you know, in his throwing out the Newtonian baby with the bathwater, what I prefer to say is this. Newtonian time, it is the structure that exists. It is time as we live inside of it. However, Einstein time, or the way that Einstein talks about time, is this other way of looking at that structure where you have maybe more freedom or less rigidity. There's all these people who are like, oh no, don't schedule my time because then I don't have any free time, or don't, you know, if you structure me to death, like I'm going to feel constricted. And so I could see Einstein time being this like really appealing thing to those people. So the thing that Einstein said is literally this: the distinction between the past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. And again, I don't know how much he actually believed that, or he was just spouting like smart guy knowledge, you know, I'm going to get a rise out of these people. Watch this. I'll tell them there's no such thing as time. You know, I don't know. But there was also this other quote from Einstein where he says that, you know, a moment with my love is like a minute, but a moment, you know, a minute on with a hot stove is like, feels like an hour.
Right.
And ultimately what this comes down to, Newtonian time is not like thrown out the window. Like it's just not true. We still structure our days, or they're structured for us, by that. But Einstein time is this way of looking at the freedom that we have in claiming and molding the time that we use.
Yeah, it's all about perception. And see, what I got hung up on when I first heard this and then read it is that the quote that you towards the end when he says, "Since I'm the producer of time, I can make as much of it as I need." And I'm like, "What? You can't make time." You know, that's where I got hung up.
Yeah,
on
you
it.
Don't and point then, your finger and shoot out. Yeah, time.
Time. Chew. Yeah, it doesn't happen that. I mean, like even for this podcast, we are going to record it at a certain time, and we had to meet together at a certain time. We didn't just. I didn't say, Eric, create some time and I'll somehow meet you in there, you know, in my created time. It doesn't work like that. And so that's where I had a bit of hang up on this kind of thing.
That but it, as well it's as all about not like applying specifically now because of Einstein time. Here's how I get twice as much done in half the time.
Right.
So it kind of left me hanging. I'm like, wait a second, dude, you didn't finish the chapter. And it's on to the next one. And I'm like, I literally hit rewind and went back and listened to it again and still didn't feel like it was fully completed thoughts.
Right. And so it does. And you and I have discussed this at length. And
yes.
One of the thing is I think it's all about perception. It's all and we'll talk about this, the perception thing. And there's this quote that goes around the Internet. I see it all the time. And it may or may not have been said by Einstein. But he says the only reason for time is so that everything doesn't happen at once. And I kind of see that, you know, it's all about perception. You know, I think it's, you know, time flies when you're having fun kind of a thing. And that's how when I boil down this whole thought about Einstein time, it's the perception of time.
Mm-hmm. And when you take this concept and the perception of time back towards the thrust of the majority of the, you know, like. Let's see, 3/4 of the book, this comes in. The first 3/4 of the book is all about those zones and progressing through and getting rid of the barriers that keep you from moving towards and into the big leap to the zone of genius. Mm-hmm. At which point, when you're in the zone of genius, he doesn't necessarily say this, but I think it's implied you're not doing things that aren't part of your zone of genius. Like, in other words, someone else would translate it like this. I'm too busy working on my zone of genius and in my zone of genius where I am uniquely qualified. I'm not uniquely qualified to do the dishes. So somebody else should probably do those.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the error of it that I got. And I may just be listening, you know, I may just be reading into that and or attaching other entrepreneurial like bogus advice that I've heard other people say, mm-hmm. but that's the way some of it comes across where it's right. Like, so then when you apply that to this and it's like, no, it's not about how much time you have. You can make all the time in the world. You never don't have enough time. You tell that to somebody who's time crunched.
Right.
And I don't mean somebody who is just agreeing or going along with Newtonian time and isn't a believer in Einstein time. I mean somebody who understands that time is about perception. And it can go fast or slow based on what you're doing with it. They still know there's a reality where things that you don't want to do have to get done. And sometimes right. You're the one who has to do them. And I think that's a dangerous place for us to get to as a society or in entrepreneur land where we just say, you know, I don't want to do those things or I will just wax over those things as not part of the reality.
Right. I think that, you know, that quote I said before, you know, that I'm the producer of time. I can make the much of it as I need that he said. I really like the quote by Charles Buxton that says, you will never find time for anything. If you want the time, you must make it. That makes me mm-hmm. that makes more sense to me because just like when you first started this podcast, you had to say no to other things to figure out how to set up your equipment, how to, you know, interview guests, how to learn how to, you know, tag it and upload it to iTunes, all that stuff, because you made the time. You didn't really make the time, but you prioritize stuff. So that's why I like that quote a little bit better is that, you know, if you'll never find time for anything, but if you want the time, you got to make it. So it's not like creating time out of nothing. You're shifting your priorities
yes.
to get what you need to get done.
Yeah. I feel there's potentially a dangerous place to go in buying completely in on a theory of Einstein time, where it is that you throw out the responsibility of being a good steward of your time, you know, like, and I said this to you literally, and I had to write it down. I said, if time is unlimited and I can always make more, then there's never anything I'm spending my time on that is the wrong use of my time. And I know that that's just not true. There are things I probably should never be doing. It is a complete and utter waste of my time. But to have the excuse, of no, I make time. I can shoot out time lasers out of my fingers and make more time.
Right.
Then that means that there's never anything wrong for me to be spending my time on. And again, that's just not true. Time is a resource and it's outside of ourselves, but the perception of that resource, just like our perception of money, our perception of time is how we become a better steward or, you know, become responsible with it.
And, you know, and you and I talked about the perception of time and how that works. Like, and I dive into creativity a lot, and, you know, all of us have that thing where they call it the flow state sometimes, where you're doing something, you're like writing a blog post or you're creating some art or whatever. And it's just, you're in the zone. You have that flow state and you look up and time has just shot by. It's like in the middle of the afternoon and you're like, I need to eat something. I'm about ready to pass out. And so, you know, that's that time feels like it's sped up. And then there's the opposite of, like, I remember when I was a kid, we'd always have to go to Christmas Eve service. And I was just like, gosh, this is dragging on forever, because I just wanted to go home and go to bed so I could wake up and be Christmas. And, you know, that time would just drag and it'd be so slow. And so, you know, that's how I see, you know, the perception of time. And, you know, then how do we flip that and almost hack it to get into those states? And how do we, you know, optimize those time, you know, to get into those flow states and with our productivity and prioritizing where it seems like it's increasing our time and it seems like we're creating that time out of nothing?
Yeah, definitely. So aside from some of the shortcoming of this portion of the book, there is some concepts here that I think you can walk away with and say, oh, okay. Well, if I really want to be in my zone of genius, if I want to be operating at my highest level possible and working on the stuff that only I should be working on and not working on something that somebody else should be doing, husbands and wives, this does not get you out of doing the dishes or other things around the house. Just get over that.
Right.
But it does mean that there are things that you can do to either have more time to spend in that zone, working on those things in that zone, I should say, or to zoom through or make time feel like it's going faster when you're doing or have to do those things that you, you know, need to do, have to do, that you can't get off your plate just yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've noticed, like, so for example, a story from my life back in the day, back during college, I had a semester off. So the summer before that semester off and then that semester off, it was like 8-9 months. I was working in a warehouse and it was grueling work, but my body was in much better shape, so that was fine. But it took, I mean, my 8-hour days just drug on until I started bringing in mixtapes in my Walkman. Remember Walkmans?
Yeah,
back before MP3s, and only by a few years, by the way. And I, by the way, I used cassette tapes because even though CDs were out, like, I didn't want them to skip. So, but once I started listening to music, suddenly it was as if time was molded or folded in on itself and I could get through an 8-hour day, no trouble. And I'm walking home listening to music and I'm like, doo, doo, doo. You know, I'm like shooting winks at the people as I walk by and put my finger in, like, you know, that scene in like 500 Days of Summer in Central Park. Anyway, that's one of those ways, like music and podcasts even, and heck, I'll say it, even Netflix. These are like multitasking in a good way. It's not that you're fully listening to the music or fully doing the task that you don't want to do, but what it does do is it makes that task that you don't want to do bearable so that you don't procrastinate on it any longer. In other words, getting something done or more done than nothing done. Does that make sense?
Right. Right.
Like spending 3 hours on something that should only take 1 hour is better than spending 0 hours and not getting it done at all.
Right. And you and I both are big fans of the new focus, full focus planner by Michael Hyatt. And that's one of the things that's really helped me with is that, you know, prioritizing those three things you're going to do that day. And I'm going to pull out another quote because I think I haven't even got it from the full focus planner. But it says that, you know, this is by Calvin Coolidge. It says, we cannot do everything at once. We can do something at once. And I think as a lot of creatives and high achievers do this is we almost get in vapor lock, where we've got all these tasks, we have this huge task list, and you know, you and I have talked about, you know, how to do the task list thing, but it seems like overwhelming, and we just get in vapor lock, and we're like, okay, where do we do? But almost we need to start something to move us on that zone of excellence, or even a zone of just plain productivity, and then that, you know, then we can get into those flow states or the creative, you know, ways to, you know, speed up time, and I think speeding up time or whatever is almost, it seems like it's going fast because you're doing so much and you're getting so many things accomplished.
Yeah, I agree. So you're getting into something that I hadn't even really meant to say, but you know what? Let's do this. There is this is going to sound very common sense, but again, sometimes common sense isn't very common, as my dad used to say. It drove me nuts that he would say that, because that was like the one smart piece of wisdom he had other than the rest of his jerky comments. But anyways, but it is very obvious here if you think about this. Number one, we need to take a look at all the stuff that we have said yes to already. Mm. Either yes to ourselves about it or yes to others. And again, that ties back into the limiting beliefs where it's like you feel like you have to say yes to others or you feel like you have to say yes to yourself. There's like, and even John Acuff gets into this, and I'm going to mention him again in a little bit, these secret rules that we have. Mm-hmm. If you remember, I've seen him speak on this now twice, and it's liberating. If you can identify what the secret rules are that you have inside your head about, I can't do this, or I, that's not a thing I can do, or, you know, this is the way things are. What are the things in your life that you've said yes to because you felt like you have to versus that you wanted to? And then again, that's not to say that you can't say yes to things you don't want to do once in a while because you have to. There's a certain thing called responsibility.
Right. Yeah.
And actually those jut out from a previous yes that you've said probably to a spouse or something. So anyway, or to an employer.
Right.
But it's doing that homework. In other words, up front, sitting down and saying, no, you know what? I am overwhelmed. I do feel like I have too much on my plate. I am going to assess. I'm going to write it all out and say, of all this stuff, like what of this stuff do I want to be doing? What of this stuff do I need to be doing? And which of these is a neither of those, you know, and just start cutting stuff off the list. Then it's about figuring out, okay, how can I spend more time doing the things that I want to do? How can I move faster through the things that I need to do, but don't necessarily want to do? And that's one of the things where, again, John Acuff comes in and talks about making things fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
And even then, that's all about perception. It's about gamification. It's about hacking the thing. It's about saying, this is the goal, or this is where I want to be. This is the thing that I'm uniquely qualified to do, and I want to be doing more of it. How do I get to that point? But I flip it on its head to where it's not that, not a have to, it's a I get to. I am privileged to, I am blessed to be able to. Hashtag blessed.
And there's a perfect example of that. So like before the tribes conference for like almost, I don't know, was it 2 or 3 months? We had done this kind of challenge where our mastermind was not going to eat sugar, any alcohol, and bread. And what was, is that it? What's the other thing?
I think so. It was just clean eating, you know, no processed food, no sugar, no alcohol.
And it wasn't fun. It's not a fun thing, especially if you eat sugar for your life. But we had this, it was a gamification like you talked about. We kept each other accountable. We said, how do we do this? We shared recipes on stuff we could eat. And we had a little app that called Streaks that we used that would count the days and all that kind of thing. So, it wasn't fun, but it sure helped us accomplish that task. And I think that goes back to what you were saying, which John Acuff said, because, you know, not all tasks will be like, woohoo, this is so much fun to do.
Not all of the tasks in our entrepreneurial life or life in general are glamorous.
Right.
And it's so, never going to be.
And so figuring out ways, like you said, to hack it, or like even with this stupid little Streaks app, which all it does is you're pressing a button, but the stupid lizard brain in you, you know, wants to hit that button. Like, I'll go do my exercise and it'll automatically do it because it syncs to my watch. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do it myself. I want to touch that button, you know? And so I think what we're talking about here is like how to do that. And that, and it does tie into to time. And I also want to say that, you know, we're not saying not to, you know, just let things go and make everything fun and don't set a deadline. There was a great article today I read about from Seth Godin, and he was talking about how important it is to set deadlines because it does make you work towards things. You know, you, having a deadline is like, you know, okay, here we are. There's another, I'm going to do another quote because I think it was in the Full Focus Planner again, but it was to achieve great things, two things are needed, a plan and not quite enough time. And Bernstein said that. And I thought that's just hilarious because that's the way I work a lot of times. Yeah. It's like, it's almost like, okay, I know I have this speaking engagement and I start getting a little of the butterflies and that spurs me on. And there's nothing, as long as we manage that and not, you know, we're not having heart attacks because we're stressing ourselves out enough, but having deadlines to make you have time, I mean, to structure your time and it's important, and it's something that we can use to our benefit and not always have to freak out about.
Yeah, it's important to have that ebb and flow and that push and that pull. I hate being up against a deadline, but sometimes that is what is needed to recalibrate priorities at the last minute or, you know, when things are down to, you know, crunch time. And again, a lot of what he proposes Einsteinian time is for is to eliminate that feeling of being crunched by time. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think that Einstein time is this way of looking at it to say you can change or lean into your perception of time to hack the things that you have to do, need to do, and move more into doing more of the things you want to do.
Right.
But again, you have to take a look and see by doing the homework, what are the reoccurring things that you've agreed to do? What are the things that you've committed to? Who are the people you've committed to? What are your priorities? And then also, how can you hack it in terms of making things go faster when you don't want to be doing them? Although I've had recent podcast episodes about this. There is a great benefit to doing something without hacking it that is hard or that is something you don't want to do and spending your time fully immersed in that moment doing it. I refer to this as the wax on, wax off, because if you remember the Karate Kid, like
Daniel-san.
he doesn't want to be paint the fence or wax on, wax off of the cars. But once he's put in those hours and that time, like, in other words, I'm saying hard work builds character. And sometimes you have to just do the hard work and put in the amount of time that it's going to take.
Right. And he was building muscle memory. I mean,
exactly.
And it's exactly the same thing with a pianist, or even if you're trying to be creative and, you know, creating even just blog graphics. I mean, just doing it causes that creativity muscle to expand and contract and also build up. And so, yeah. I think that's super important. And also, you know, you had mentioned he talked about how, you know, time with his love spent, you know, that hardly took any time. And whenever anybody asks him, he says, I have all the time in the world, which I took away, and it kind of was a little bit woo-woo, but I took away from it is being in the moment. And I know you've had podcasts about this, and even with the Cal Newport, when you talked to him about his deep work, trying to do that has a lot to do with this time concept as well. Is, you know, when I'm with my kids or my family, I need to be in the moment, in time with them, and not looking at my phone, not being distracted. You know, just like this, you know, this podcast, we had to think about what we were going to say. We kind of, you know, knew we were going to do this topic, but I took time to think about it and be in the moment here with you to record this. And so it's so important of even productivity is, and you mentioned hacks and, you know, we've talked about moving priorities, but when we're doing what we're needing to be doing is being there in time, you know, in the moment.
Yeah, I agree. And so this really does intersect like 12 different episodes in the last two years that I can remember, whether it's, like you said, Cal Newport or, Brooke McCallery recently, even the one that I did a week ago on the Sabbath, that has a lot to do with that. One that I mention all the time is, Rob Bell from about a week, a summer ago. And again, it's not just about being highly productive. It's about getting the right things done and pacing yourself. And I would say that all along, as I've been talking about saying things like getting the right things done and not just getting more things done, I've been all along pushing towards this idea that there are certain things that only you can do. You're not, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, you're some unique snowflake, beautiful and all that. But at the same time, no, you're a human being with value and worth. And there are things that only you can do. You have a unique perspective. Even if someone else has a similar talent sphere or spectrum or perspective, you're still just you, you know? And I don't know. Anyway, again, it's getting into that frou-frou area.
Right. You're unique just like everybody else.
You're unique. When I'm special, if everybody gets an award, no one gets an award. I don't know. Anyways, anyway, we've beaten this to death, I think, at this point. But the takeaway here is you can be in control of not just the way you structure your time Newtonian wise. You can then transform the way that you use that time, stewarding it through a perspective of Einstein time, by having a better perspective or perception of the time that you have.
Well said.
So I would love to continue this conversation in the comments for this episode. You can find those at beyondthetodolist.com/197. And Jeff, if you want, you can jump over there too. So
cool. That'll be fun.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Jeff, I know that this has been fun and I'll have to have you back on again next time we both read a book and want to ramble on it. So,
right. Well, thanks for having me.
So, have I changed your perspective or perception of time with this episode? I hope that I at least got you thinking, or that Jeff and I in our conversation got you thinking, so that you can start to ponder the amount of time or the source of time, etc., in your life, and what you're going to do with it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors again, Formstack. Make sure to go to formstack.com/beyond for a free trial and to receive a promo code for 25% off your first 3 months. And BarkBox. If you have a dog in your life, whether it's yours or someone you know and you're very fond of it, get an extra month free with your 6 to 12 month plan by going to barkbox.com/beyond. If you found this conversation interesting and want to pass it on to somebody specific that you thought of as you were listening, do me a favor, share it with that one person that you know would be interested in listening to this conversation. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you next episode. Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx.